Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a special Sunday episode of Take the Black Live, the show where on Wednesdays we talk everything sci-fi, fantasy, movies, books, TV, swords, lasers, dragons, that kind of thing. And every Sunday night we talk all things House of the Dragon, which also includes things like dragon swords, horses, the child murder, the fellatio in the Red Keep. King Dog, all kinds of things. My name is Dan Selke. I'm the editor of winterscoming.net, here with Daniel Roman, also the editor of winterscoming.net, and our supervisor, our boss, Natalie Zamora. How are you all feeling tonight?
So good.
Good. And hey, everybody watching.
So good. Putting in, yeah.
I'm glad you approve. And hey, hello, Robert. Hello, Martha. Hello, Julie. Hello, Chandra. Hello, everybody in the chat. Happy to be here. We're going to do this every single Sunday after the episode. So we get seven more weeks of this, 8 weeks total of House of the Dragon season 2. All right. It just finished. We're going to break it down. We're going to give you our opinions. We're going to give you our impressions. We're going to say the do's and don'ts. We're going to say what worked, what didn't, what was brilliant, what sucked, if anything. And I would like to start with your permission. We just kind of go around a circle and say our basic impressions to kick this off.
Natalie?
Let's do it. Yeah.
Okay. First up, I want to say our commenters like it a lot. Julie Davies, loved it. That's how you start a season, says Chandra, going over well. I've watched episode 3 times now. I watched it in the screeners. Sorry, be jealous of me. Twice. And I watched it just now. And I'll say this. I liked the episode better every time I watched it. At first, I was a little put off by the slowness of it, and I didn't adore the way that the blood and cheese scene. The second time, I liked more, and there was more details. The third time, I was more into it. I thought the drama worked better. I kept noticing more things. I got more involved emotionally with scenes like Jace coming back, like Julie says. I still have some problems with it, but it definitely went up in my estimation. And I think, tell me if I'm crazy here. I feel like this felt a bit more like an episode in the middle of the season rather than a season opener. And I kind of had to sink back into a rhythm before I really came to like this, which I did get there. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think the slowness is definitely there. I feel like there was, I don't know, I kind of felt differently in that I thought it felt like a premiere and that they had to explain a lot of things and like get you back into it. And that's where I think the slowness kind of came from. But overall, I really, really enjoyed it. And I think I also have seen it 3 times. So I think the first time I told Daniel this when I was talking to him the other day, I was just like crying because I'm like, we're back. This is happening. It's been 2 years. We're finally doing this. So I had no critical eye at all the first time I watched it. But overall, no, I really, really did enjoy it. Was it perfect? No, but like we're back and it made me really, really excited.
I am glad.
Damn. Yeah. I mean, so I had seen this, I want to say, I guess three times as well, actually. Right. I loved this Club. Episode. I do have some qualms with Blood and Cheese specifically, but as a whole, like the pace, we've talked about the pace a little bit. We talked about it on our Wednesday stream, and like I think the pace worked great personally. Like I said this on Wednesday, but like Thrones premieres are never like barn burner, like very fast paced bangers. Like they're typically kind of like resetting the chessboard and introducing us to who's where, how things have shifted since the previous season. Yeah, like Robert said, I loved seeing the Starks as well. I got chills just like out of the gate with all of the stuff with Jace and Kragan. Love seeing Tom Taylor in the episode. I wish we got more, but more of Jason Kragan, I mean. But I'm hopeful we'll see more of Kragan again at some point. And that just, you know, wasn't his only scene of the season or anything. Can I ask you guys, what did you think of the new intro? We're going to talk about Blood and Cheese. I see Leo talking about it. We'll get there. But new intro? Yay, nay?
I don't have strong feelings about it really. It's neat to look at. Natalie.
I did really like it, but I think I need to like study shot by shot better. I know Daniel, you were live tweeting and you were talking about it a little bit. So tell us about it. What did we miss?
Ooh, yes.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to need to go through shot by shot and break this new intro down. I love the new intro. I feel like it's a huge upgrade from season one. So
most things
basically
would be.
Yeah, that's fair. I feel like season one, it was like you could only really analyze it if you were like so hardcore you could figure out what those little like knobs on the castle were, like who they represented. Mm-hmm. But this one, like we got some scenes from season one. Like we see Allison coming into the ball in her green dress. We see the final dinner with King Viserys and his divided family. The Great Council of 101 AC was in there. So there were all those scenes. There were also things like the Doom of Valyria, which is, you know, ancient Targaryen history that sparked them coming to Westeros in the first place. So I love this idea that I think Ryan Condal said this to Entertainment Weekly or some other outlet, that it's basically like the idea of history being woven in front of you, the Targaryen history, but then going up to and including current events. So I'm kind of curious, I wonder if they're going to change it throughout the season like they did last season, where we're going to see, you know, Rook's Rest or Blood and Cheese get sewn in. I almost thought Blood and Cheese was in the tapestry because there was one shot of someone who looked like Helena with a little blonde haired person on them. So yeah, I'm going to have to go break that down, but I loved the new intro.
Yeah. I like that it's more colorful than the last one. I guess I agree with Chandra a little bit. It is a little on the nose. I liked it. It was cool.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Can we move on to what we liked about the episode? Or do we want to talk about this for another 45 minutes?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Okay. I want to start with a positive, and I have a bunch of positives. I think a few other people around here said it. The highlight to me, and I'm not the only person here, I think Robert said it, I really liked King Aegon Targaryen, played by Tom Carney. So yeah. We're here, we're picking up after the season one finale when Rhaenyra's son Luke is killed by her nephew Aemon, old angry one-eye accident face. And I guess the reason that I expected there to be more propulsion, I guess, was because we ended on Rhaenyra's angry, clockwork orange, furrowed brow, furious face. And that to me said like, uh-oh, everybody duck. And then this was more she's kind of a mourning, she's in a bit of a torpor, which is true in the book, by the way. That does happen in Fire and Blood. So I guess they got that part right. But I guess I just expected a little more zoom, and I got a little more contemplative, which I came to appreciate after multiple watchings. King Aegon, though, he was like he was the fun one. He was kind of the one who, whenever he was on screen, it was a bit more buoyancy to it. I liked every scene he was in. And I kept noticing new things, like in that scene where he walks into Queen Helena's room looking for his kid. He has to like get right up next to his daughter to realize, oh, that's not the right one. And then he goes and looks up for somebody else. I liked him tuning out of the small council meeting. And maybe the treasury secretary is going to give us on a pony ride. That was cute. I liked him drinking at the Iron Throne. I like, you could see the gears turning in his head. It's like, should I fire my grandpa? Should I just give these folk what they asked for instead of listening to his advice? I thought he was fun, interesting to watch, a bit of chaotic energy. He seems like he wants to do a nice job. So I liked him a lot.
Yeah, I was shocked, honestly, in a good way, because in season one, he gave us nothing. Like, he was just, he was a villain. I did not like him, but he was barely memorable. He didn't have a lot of lines, and he kind of was just, like, there being an asshole. But now, he's really, really entertaining. I'm not going to root for him, but, like, I want him to be on my screen more.
There you go.
Yeah. I agree with that. I'm not going to be like rooting for Aegon, like by any means, but I really like, he was the standout character of the episode for me too. Like, I enjoyed his scenes the most. Emma Darcy did amazingly. Like, I totally agree with everyone in the chat who's calling out how good Emma Darcy did, especially considering that they only had a single line for the whole episode.
Yeah.
Which kind of reminded me almost of like Daenerys at the beginning of season 7 of Thrones. Cause like, granted, she's in that episode even less, but she only has one line when she arrives at Dragonstone at the very end of the episode. So I liked all of that. I loved Kragan and the North. I liked the little bit of lore about how they, you know, sent people to the wall from their households. And all of those little sorts of drops. The dragons were beautiful. We didn't see a lot of them, but Syrax, Maelys, Vhagar a tiny bit, all really cool. But yeah, the standout thing for me for sure was Aegon. You just feel for him. Like, it's crazy. It's funny because like both seeing him be like petty as hell in the small council meeting when he's threatening to have Tywin like give his son a pony ride. But then later, like on the Iron Throne, like you said, Dan, like him clashing with Otto and like it's cool to see Aegon trying to be a good king because it's not something he ever wanted. It's not something he ever thought he would have to do. And now he's like, hey, maybe I could be good at it, except all the people around him are kind of hovering and making that harder. I didn't catch this my first watch. When he's drunk later on the Iron Throne, as Blood and Cheese are walking by, he had some good zingers. When he walked in the first time to the throne room, they were like, King Aegon the Magnanimous. And he was like, Magnanimous, really? And then when he was drinking later with his soldiers or whoever, he was like, no one even knows what magnanimous means. And it's like that kind of stuff. Like, I love those details for Aegon.
Could you catch the bit where the one guy was like, how about Aegon the Strong? And he's like, my nephew already has that title. Like, lots of good little lines in the background.
Yeah. No, I didn't catch that. That's great.
I kept noticing new things, which I do like about the episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to bring up the wall opening. I'll say Kyle loved it. Let's see the stars coming into the mix. Paper down the road. I think the wall opening kind of fell a little flat for me all three times. It was fun seeing. My favorite thing was the lore bit with the guy who drew the black hole and had to go be in the Night's Watch. That was fun.
Sure.
But I, Creek and Stark's wig is bad. So
yeah,
he, like, got a new wig for Harry Cole who plays Jace, and now they got a bad wig on Creek and Stark. Someone's got to bear it, I guess.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure of the wisdom of, I don't know, like making the scene sort of about the mysterious White Walker-y death beyond when it's not going to come into the show, and like making that your opening scene or going to the wall, maybe for the first time and the only time in the entire show, and just like highlighting it as your first scene in your new season. So it was fine. I liked him saying death. That's accurate. I don't know if it's relevant.
Go ahead, Daniel.
I was just going to say that I can see what you mean about, like, it's almost kind of like going for the easy nostalgia bit to be like, oh, we're going to reference the White Walkers here at the top. That's going to be totally like, spoiler alert, everyone, the White Walkers, unless they change something drastically, are going to be totally irrelevant for this whole show. But there is a reason that I think they maybe not needed that scene, but they managed to make it do kind of double duty, because it served as a good way for Kragan to make the excuse of why he's not giving Jace more men, which is important for the coming season, because Kragan will only give him old men to fight in the war. And that is an important thing for the Stark forces we'll eventually see. What were you going to say, Natalie?
I questioned them opening with it. I think it was totally just the nostalgia of, oh, here are Starks. Okay, remember, this is Game of Thrones, guys. Like, here's what you remember, and this is, you know, the franchise. But so I was a little bit confused about that. I thought they were going to open up with Rhaenyra doing something. So again, kind of Dan saying, like, that momentum that they were building up. And I said it in one of our chats, and it's mean, but I didn't think they're that strong of actors either. So like them opening up and talking, like, I loved what they were saying. The delivery, I didn't buy as much. Those are my only critiques. Otherwise, I was really, really happy to see them. I was really, really excited because I love their scenes in the book, which, as Daniel was saying, we're, I guess, not going to see in the show, which is fine. But I did really, really love seeing them together, and being in the North was awesome. So while I did question it and I was like, yeah, that was a little risky, I also was very, I was part of the nostalgia. Like, I bought into it also.
Yeah. So.
I didn't hate it. It just, I didn't think it was the strongest way to open the season. And you're right. It's going to get some history. Rhaenyra and Daemon. Let's do them for a second. Rhaenyra was one of those things. Again, I don't know why it didn't really land for me. Look at those hearts. Restream. Nice. Kudos to you.
Rhaenyra and Daemon. Restream knows what the people want.
Why isn't it? Whatever. I'm not sure why it didn't really land for me the first two times I watched the episode. And this third time was different. I liked it more the third time, where I guess I just wanted Rhaenyra to be like Dragonfire from the jump, because I feel like this season one finale promised me this. I don't feel like I'm crazy for expecting this.
Yeah.
And then she was so subdued. So I guess maybe I was thinking like, what, go mount something and kill somebody. But after I settled in and kind of got into this new rhythm, I did get emotional when she found Luke's remains. I did get emotional when Jace came back and had like, "Mom, we going to have people. There's going to be fun."
That scene nice destroyed moment. Me.
Yes.
Faces of grief. Yes, it goes through. She went to anger, I guess, first, and then got into depression. We were catching up with her in depression. So it works after I think about it for a second. Yes, she is mad. She'll be going for it. I liked that. The fact that she had one line. I feel like it was they're doing it a bit on purpose. They know we want to see Rhaenyra, and they're like, "What if in the premiere she only said one thing? Wouldn't that be crazy?" But overall, I thought that worked, and I always like when Daemon's on screen. He kind of like Aegon. He was constrained, but he was like pounding desks. He was saying, "Go ride with me, do whatever." He's another one of those who kind of, I don't know what he's gonna do. I know he's capable of lashing out and doing something crazy, so he's a little excited when he's on screen. Also, Matt Smith is very good at his job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Natalie, you have thoughts on Daemon and Rhaenyra?
Of course. Of course. Sorry. I do. Of course. Yeah. No, I think Rhaenyra was probably in denial. So maybe that's, sure. She had to get the closure. She had to see if it was actually true. But I did love when she came back and like her and Daemon reunited and they touched foreheads. And like,
that was sweet. That was nice.
My people were here. And I know obviously, we've talked about it. Daemon and Rhaenyra have a very, very, very complicated relationship. It's, if they were real life people, we could not stand them morally, but this is not real life.
Thank God they're not.
Yeah, but I know that in the season one finale, there were some questionable actions by Daemon, but I still think he is like her biggest supporter. And so for him to come in and say, "I'm ready to go to Harrenhal, like, what do you need me to do?" She gives the order and he's like, "All right, we're killing Aemon." It was awesome. It just always makes me happy to see him just know his place, even though the season one finale, I don't know, but I think they're in a good place now, I guess.
I like seeing him kind of like know his place, but clearly bristle at it.
Yeah.
And like want to like wiggle free, but not quite being able to. Daniel, your thoughts?
Aside from just that, I really enjoyed all their scenes that each of them individually had. Like Matt Smith and Emma Darcy are always wonderful on screen. I loved Rhaenyse, Eve Best, Rhaenyse's kind of throwback at Daemon when she told him, "Would that you were a king," when he tries to command her. And she's like, "Nah." But I almost feel like Daemon is almost kind of like representative of a thing with the episode as a whole, which is he was kind of like frustrated and wanting to go throughout the whole episode. Yes. And it's almost like, I feel like House of the Dragon, and for the record, I loved the premiere. I have issues with Blood and Cheese that we're going to talk about. But I think the show almost kind of wrote itself into a corner in terms of the pacing with things like Blood and Cheese, or like you said, Dan, with Rhaenyra seeming really angry at the end of the first season and then being in her grief at the start of this season, which is what we needed from her, I think. It would have been kind of silly if she was like, "I'm an avenging dragon rider now after suffering through that." But I feel like there's a little bit of like, I don't want to say like treading water, but they needed to stretch out what Daemon was doing in this episode. And they settled on, he's just mad at everyone because he wants to be gone. And in the book, he is already gone when all this stuff happens. So that is kind of like a thing they needed to find some way to fill time before Blood and Cheese, because he does Blood and Cheese from Harrenhal in the book, not Dragonstone.
I want her at Blood and Cheese, obviously. I feel like we should save that for the end because it is where the biggest controversy is. I see some folk talking about it in the chat. I agree and disagree with all of you. Good thoughts. We can't. First, let's do Allison and Kristen.
Yes.
Secret sexy lovers in the Red Keep.
I keep forgetting that's a thing.
It is really forgettable.
I love it because it's so messy and it just is more entertaining. But girl, what happened to honor? I don't know. It's out the window. It really is.
Yeah. Somebody said like hypocrites up in the comments, I remember.
Yeah.
And this person, Natalie E., who that is not you. It's different Natalie. Okay. Kristen Cole breaking his vows again. So much for precious honor. Ooh, I love people agree with me. Beth Braden says, I agree with season episode show, not a book as episode one should be. You know what, Beth? You and I, very, very smart people. We agree. I'm not sure about Miguel Sapochnik's guidance, but I do think it felt a little more like a Mrs. One. Honor, he's breaking it. They're pure. They're chaste. They're above this kind of thing, but they're doing it anyway. I mean, they wouldn't be the first judgmental Puritan folk to do things behind closed doors and then present a front of we're so holier than thou when they're in public. I don't, again, like, have terribly strong feelings about this either. I don't think it's like character breaking or anything. I think it's perfectly fine. Yeah, why not? Again, I liked it more the third time I watched it. It's hard to know what's going on in Kristen Cole's head in particular. I feel like I'm kind of there with Allison. She's under a lot of stress.
Yeah.
And she's like been used to being a hypocrite. I guess they both are. And maybe that's where their connection is.
Kristen is the worst. It's just, I feel like there's no, I feel like in the first season, I did understand where he was coming from with a lot of his actions. But at this point, I'm just like, you're a loser. Go away. And it's just so funny too, that he, you know, I keep seeing people who were tweeting during the episode, bring up the screenshot of when him and Rhaenyra were on the boat to wherever they were going, Dragonstone. When he said, like, oh, you want me to be your whore? Driftmark, thank you. You want me to be your whore? And got so mad at her, and that started everything. Oh, he's literally a whore. Sorry.
That's wonderful.
So sorry, Natalie.
Yeah. Good call.
Sorry, Natalie. Julie made a rather funny comment. Please continue.
Oh,
no. Drop comment.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I agree with both of you. I like it for Allison. I don't necessarily like it for Kristen. Not even because like Kristen sucks. Like they can do whatever with him, but I don't know how I feel about the fact that it's now like Kristen's thing to have shameful relationships that break his vow. And I feel like with Rhaenyra, it was a very specific thing where like, and I promise I will not always be the annoying person who's like in the book, but in this, I'm going to do it again here where like, that was an instance in the book where there were like multiple versions of events. No one quite knew why Kristen turned on Rhaenyra. It was all speculating. So that was a very specific reason to do it. And I loved that. But this feels a little like, they needed something for Kristen to do. And what they landed on was just, he will pleasure Allison. I think Allison doing it totally works. I like Allison kind of trying to find some control in that way in her life. Because, you know, she had Laris Strong ogling her feet 10 days ago. Like, let's not forget season one, the Green Council, all that was like 10 days ago, not even a fortnight. I will say I hated that Kristen and Allison were banging at the end. I hated that Allison was not in the room for Blood and Cheese. And that I do have really, really strong feelings about. And Olivia Cook, she would have killed that. She would have killed Blood and Cheese if she was in that scene. So,
all right. Let's talk about Blood and Cheese. So, which, by the way, are the names given to
so long.
which are the names given to these two characters who sneak into the Red Keep at Daemon's behest and kill Jaehaerys Targaryen, the cute little kid who was cavorting around the small council room earlier in the episode. There does seem to be some folk. Okay, I'll say right now. So this was called like the next Red Wedding. I think we can all agree it wasn't on that level. I was not devastated by this.
No.
Once again, I did find it much more tense on my third go round. I'm not entirely even sure why.
Yeah.
I guess maybe because I was used to it. I kept. Okay, here we go. I know we're getting some comments. Demare thinks huge disappointment. I thought it worked overall. I don't have a huge problem with it. I can see it being a disappointment if, and I think this is the case for a lot of people, it was talked up so much as this huge Red Wedding level event. Yes. And it's just not. Like, there's no way it could be, because Blood and Peas are literally new characters we don't meet until this scene. Helaena, we don't really know that well either. The kid is...
No one.
Children aren't really characters. They're just kind of empty vessels who don't have fully formed brains or personalities yet. So wow. It was going to come down to the staging, I guess. It didn't land incredibly well for me. Ooh. Okay. As Julie says, not as expected. I do think that expectations matter. I do think if you go into this not expecting it to be a giant earth-shattering event, it would work better. Because after I got used to it, I liked it more on this third time around when I just think of it as this. Well, how goody for you. You get a chance to explain. When you think of it as another like kind of ratcheting up as... of the going back and forth from the blacks and the greens rather than some kind of seismic event that will define the show, like they're going to find the last show.
Yeah.
I didn't like the tense violin strings that they kept playing during it. Like, I could have stand to get rid of that. I thought that was kind of insisting on how dramatic it was when it just would have been better if they just would have let it play out. I thought it was tense and spooky and creepy. I didn't mind Allison's absence or her sleeping with Kristen. And I don't mind that they cut off the kid's head off screen either. I do wish they would have like, I don't know. Okay. I'll say a criticism of it and then I'll turn it over to you guys. I know I'm babbling a lot. I don't mind that they killed. Even HBO isn't going to behead a kid on screen. I'm sorry. They're just not. I don't expect that, Leo. I guess I wish they would have like cut to Helaena in a silent scream or something. My main problem with it, I think, was Helena's reactions. They seem to be going for this like she's shocked into kind of shocked in shock, basically. Like so surprised she can't think or do anything and just kind of acting on instinct. In the book, I can do this too. Hey, Leo, we burnt like a 13-year-old, not a 4-year-old. There's a difference. In the book, she kind of begs for her, like, to them to kill her instead. She screams, and it's there was just something I wanted more of a histrionic, over-the-top, dramatic line to my heart.
Yeah.
I'm not sure this dead shock, while it might have been realistic, I've never been in this situation, I can't say. I'm not sure it worked for a TV show like House of the Dragon as well as the other kind would have. That was my main problem with it. I still think it worked. I agree that it could have been better. I think it more or less worked. And I mean, there were no guards in that area. I don't know where all the guards were. Kristen couldn't be the only one. They couldn't all be banging Allison. That's where I stand on it.
Now, although that would have been a like believable it. Way to that would have been Allison nice. Out of the room.
I did think it worked, and I was on the edge of my seat more the third time. But yeah, it's not the scene to end all scenes or anything. Mm-hmm.
Daniel, give us your thoughts. No, I know you have a lot.
What? Okay. Well, so I agree with everyone in the chat saying it could have been better. I also agree. I don't think that the issue was the death being off screen. I think I'm assuming you're supposed to be Daemira and not Daemia, but if you're Daemia, also cool. I agree with that. I think HBO did not need to behead a six-year-old on screen. That's not what the scene was missing. And yes, we did get, you know, Shireen Baratheon burning, but that's like an end of season, like episode 9, I think, moment. And it's still one of the hardest moments to watch in all of Game of Thrones for me. I think what the problem with Blood and Cheese was is that the scene is very, very intentional in the book as it's presented. So like Blood and Cheese go to Alicent's room because they know Helena has a habit of going there every night. They capture Alicent, they strangle her bedmaid. Then when Helena gets there, they kill all her guards. There were guards in the book. The fact that there are no guards anywhere in the royal apartments, that it reeks of plot contrivance to me. Like they needed that to happen for the scene to work, not because it made any sort of sense. And then, so the big issue with Blood and Cheese in the book, they make Helena choose which child do you want us to kill? We're only going to kill one. We promise, but you need to tell us which one it's going to be. And then when she tells them, Cheese whispers to the one she chose here, which is the younger son. So Helena has a younger son with Aegon, Maelor, who has not been in the show. So there are two sons to choose from. Cheese tells younger son, hear that, your mama wants you dead. And then they murder the other one that she chose to live. So I push back on the, it was never going to be a red wedding moment because that was the show defining thing that changed the course of the show. Well, I think Blood and Cheese in the book is a red wedding moment personally. And I don't think it's necessarily because it changes the course of things. I think in terms of the sheer brutal, horrible shock of it. And I think George R. R. Martin is so good at writing those sheer, brutal, awful scenes that make you be like, oh my God, what did I just read? And I think the show really took all the teeth out of Blood and Cheese. It's still a terrible scene. The sounds of Jaehaerys being beheaded are awful. But I think they tried to humanize Blood and Cheese so much, really focus on how insane is it these two dudes are sneaking into the castle. Like they made Blood and Cheese the main characters of this scene instead of Helena or Alicent or any of the characters we've been attached to. And that was a choice. And I feel like they've toned down people being awful a bit. And I think this was one moment where we really, really, really needed them to be awful. And Blood gave us the impression he had it in him. You know, talking about how he hated the Hightowers when Daemon first hired him. The Sophie's Choice was missing Sandiel. And that is a huge, it's just less powerful in my opinion. Like, it's just less horrifying. Like, how much less horrifying is it that they ask Helena, which one's your son? And she just points to the one. And then they're like, do we
really fast?
I guess she just told us, so I guess we'll do it. Versus like the very intentionally cruel thing they did in the book. So that's my very long-winded, I have a lot of issues with it. I still think it's really good, like in its own way, but it's just they pulled the punch. They kind of sacrificed Blood and Cheese, I think, for the season's arc as a whole. Natalie, what are your thoughts on this scene?
I don't know what I was expecting. I mean, obviously I was expecting it to go the way that it did in Fire and Blood, but like in terms of my expectations, obviously it's a really big scene in the book. I agree that it's maybe like a red wedding-esque in the book just because it is such a major moment in the war that really is a big catalyst for it. But I just went in knowing I was going to be disappointed, so it didn't hit me as badly maybe. Like I kind of was just like, okay. I'm really for this moment, I know it's not going to be as like horrific or like it's not going to give me a stomach ache, you know, like it's not going to make me feel like terrible. And I thought, you know, we're talking about some of the pacing, maybe it was slow in the episode, but then the ending was so rushed, maybe like I don't know. It just felt, I felt like there was definitely tension, but not enough. It just felt like very underwhelming in that they didn't. No. Kill the heir, the usurper heir, but an heir to the throne. So I don't know. I thought I did like some of it. I thought it was actually shot pretty well. Like, I liked the moments leading up to it, how they were like walking through the room.
Yeah, I did too.
And I thought that felt good. Like, I was getting nervous, but then the actual scene where it happened, I just kind of felt like, okay, that wasn't a big deal, even though it obviously very much was. And I thought, like, the whole, you know, she's lying. No, she's not lying. Like, what was even, I guess, just
to build point.
Some tension, but I thought that dialogue wasn't great. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think they needed the choice. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious what they did. I think they cut Maelor because he's like a very minor baby character they don't want to have to deal with later in the season when he dies. But they still felt a need to include like a point to one of your children moment, but they didn't have anything to do it with. They have like a kind of a different, not as impactful choice. So yeah, I agree. I think it should have hit harder than it did. I think we can all agree on that. Yeah. I think it could have hit harder. I don't think she needed to. If you're going to cut out the other son, I don't think you need to choose at all. I don't think Allison needed to be there necessarily. I didn't hurt that. I just wanted more reaction from Helena. I wanted more kill me and not my kid. Something like that. Something between when they asked her to choose and when she just kind of points, or just cut that bit out entirely. I think Julie proposed like something like when Catelyn fights off the guy who's trying to kill Bran or something. Like something else. Because you should be able to wring more drama out of a mother watching her son get killed. I don't care what the context is. Like, you should be able to do that. I also agree with you, Daniel, that it was, again, like kind of making... I kind of liked getting to know Blood and Cheese for the 8 seconds we did. I thought that I didn't hate that. To make them the main characters, though, not Helena, was that was strange.
Yeah,
I think I agree with you about needing just a little bit more like from her. I feel like they went straight from like Helena is a space cadet regularly to Helena is traumatized, and they didn't really have any you know, bartering with them aside from like I have a necklace, but like, you know, she's not saying please kill me instead of my children, which is what happens in the book. And I think for a scene of a mother watching their child be murdered in front of them, I was surprised at how little I felt in moments in that scene. So I do think that is like a thing, like as a whole, you can look at and be like, this didn't quite land as well as it could have. Because even like surface level on any show, you should be able to make people cringe away from that sort of material. And like, just to give a little bit of perspective on this. So my wife has not read Fire and Blood. I read her the 2 pages of Blood and Cheese after we watched this, because Blood and Cheese is only like 2 pages. So when we watched it the first time, she, you know, it was like, oh, that was awful. Read Blood and Cheese. Okay. She like gasped multiple times across reading those 2 pages. So like, I think there's just something to like the scenes just not quite being up to snuff the way they did it. But I think, again, with Maelor, like you said, Dan, like they kind of decided they didn't want to deal with Maelor, who just dies later in the dance in another horrific way, being torn apart by a mob. They were like, do we really need another child murder? We can perhaps limit those. They kind of wrote themselves into a corner with this scene where they were like, we can make her choose something, but we don't have another child, so I guess we'll just find something else to do.
Which one's Lori?
Yeah, so Blood and Cheese let me down a little bit, but I enjoy watching it. That sounds awful. I enjoy watching it. But I agree with what Natalie said about it, like being shot well and stuff like that. I did like the emphasis on Blood and Cheese. I liked seeing it. I wish Helena was still more of the main character of that scene. But it was cool seeing the Red Keep. I loved them sneaking across the throne room. I thought that was a really nice touch.
Yeah, that was good.
I don't know logistically if that was necessary, because we never really saw like when Daemon took Rhaenyra out of the castle, they didn't have to sneak across the throne room. So it's like, Does blood? Yeah. Does cheese really know these passages all that well? That you need to walk across the literal Iron Throne Room to get places. But yeah, slash rants.
Maybe there's more than one path. So yeah, I think that's about it. I would say, I mean, look, it does hurt the episode. I think having watched it three times, I think a B minus is about fair. I'm going to say good episode, solid. But the final big climax is a bit of a letdown, which is a disappointment. So I think a B minus. That's what I'm going to give it. Good old B minus.
About it now.
Sorry?
You're being nicer about it now.
I liked it more. I don't know what happened. Like, a lot more stuff was hitting for me. Even Blood and Cheese hit harder for me.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see what the discourse is going to be about it, how people are going to react to it. Because I think after 2 years away, most, and after so much hype about this, I think a lot of folk are probably going to be disappointed.
Yeah, I agree. But I will say, if there's the casual fans that have never even heard of Blood and Cheese, I think they'll think it's crazy, probably.
Maybe.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Julie. I think it was a B plus for me because Blood and Cheese was really the only thing I actually really had a problem with. I wish we had more Craig and Stark. I didn't really expect them to montage Jace's journey there. Like, and also skip Jane Arryn, which, like, we know Jane Arryn's in the show. She's played by Amanda Collin from Raised by Wolves, but Jace was like, I just visited her and made the deal type thing. But aside from Blood and Cheese, I loved everything else about the episode for the most part. So I'm going to go with a B plus, I think.
I really liked it. Like, this is a good comment from Damia saying that she wanted more reaction from the Greens on Luke's death. No speech of things going worse. Like, an reaction from to Aemon's action. No reaction from Allison. That was one of the things I wanted the first time I watched it. When I watched it again, I did notice a lot more like currents between everybody, especially in that small council scene. Where you can tell that Allison is mad about this.
Yeah.
Otto is still steamed about this. You can tell the kind of the new little thing they've settled into. And I'm going to assume they'll give us Aemon's thoughts on this as the season goes on. It is a season of TV. So a lot of it got better for me as it went along, but the Blood and Peace thing does hurt a bit. I'm sorry about that. Any other thoughts, guys, before we sign off?
We have to go watch the preview for next week.
Yes, I do.
We all do.
It's a banger. I did see it. Sorry, that's why I was late, everyone. Yeah, it's a banger. The rest of the season looks awesome. the only other thing I wanted to shout out, Alan of Hull. I loved the introduction for Alan of Hull. I like they've aged him up a little bit from he was like a 16-year-old in the book. I like that actor a lot. He was also in Raised by Wolves, and he voiced Bayek in Assassin's Creed Origins. I love seeing him in this show. So I am ready for Alan and Adam of Hull and Corlys Velaryon. I would watch many more scenes of them. I enjoyed them a lot.
Cool. Well, Natalie, anything else to say before we go?
I also would give it a B plus, maybe an A minus as I watch it more. I think also when I watch the full season and go back to it, hopefully I'll enjoy it more once you see everything, how it came together. But no, I'm really, really excited. We are back and I can't wait for next week.
I'm excited, but my excitement is muted because Blood and Cheese event wasn't all that exciting. I'm going to lower it to a C plus so I balance out you two optimists. And that's our take, guys. Thanks for joining. We are off this Wednesday because we are all off for Juneteenth, so no show this Wednesday. But usually we stream Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, talk about all things TV, movies, books that aren't House of the Dragon related. I'll sure find some time for that too. And on Sunday nights after each episode, we will all be here talking about House of the Dragon. Maybe it'll get even better, or
nice.
we'll see what happens. Until then, feel free to download us in podcast form wherever podcasts are available, be it iTunes, Google Play, elsewhere. Give us a like, give us a subscribe, go through our old stuff. Why not? What else are you doing tonight? And we will see you next Sunday and then every Sunday and Wednesday after that, but not this upcoming Sunday. Thanks all.
Wednesday. We'll be here this upcoming Sunday.
So many weekdays.
There are too many podcasts.
We'll see you when we see you.
Too many days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bye, everybody.
All right. Bye. Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotions section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.